This is the Rock and Roll Autopsy Podcast.
All right, I'm going to zap her again. Charge up the paddles. Come on, let's go.
Sorry, Doctor.
Hold the compressions.
Clear.
Straight line.
Good evening and welcome to Rock and Roll Autopsy. We are the Forensic Files on your radio dial. My name is Scott, and have we got a great show for you tonight? No, we don't. Damn it. The phone is ringing again. It's the request line. All right, let's pick it up. WRNRA, east of the Rockies. Hey, breather, what's going on, man? You think it's time old washed-up rock and roll acts hang it up and stop embarrassing themselves on stage? I agree, man. Some of these bands with the lip-syncing and backing tracks are pathetic. People gotta have enough self-awareness to know when enough is enough. What do you mean the same standard should apply to lame rock and roll podcasts? Listen, you called the request line. Is there a song you'd like us to perform an autopsy on? My Ding-a-Ling by Chuck Berry? You got it. All right, buckle up, gang. The subject of our rock and roll autopsy tonight will be My Ding-a-Ling by the father of rock and roll, Chuck Berry. We'll get the show started after these very important messages from our sponsors.
What's up, music nerds? Are you tired of wading through a sea of mediocre music, desperately seeking to find a glimmer of greatness? You're in luck. My name is Mark, and I am the host of the podcast, Songs That Don't Suck. Each week, I scour the depths of new music playlists to unearth hidden gems that defy the trends and deliver pure sonic bliss. No matter the genre, if it doesn't suck, it's on my radar. So find us on your favorite podcast platform and subscribe today. And as always, keep searching for and listening to Songs That Don't Suck.
Breaking news!
What is this garbage you're watching?
I want to watch the news.
This is the news.
All right, gang, we've got our intrepid rock and roll beat reporter, Rico Gnu, on the line. Seven-time Silver Sow Award winner and winner of the 1961 Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest. Rico Gnu, how good are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good.
No, Gnus.
We gonna keep this up?
I'll fit as many G's into it as I can, because we are a couple of fucking G's. Let me just say that.
You're a straight G.
Straight up. So let's get started, shall we? If there's anybody in the rock world that's never been afraid to speak up about something, and not necessarily in a bad way either, actually, has been Dee Snider, wouldn't you say? I mean, he's always been outspoken, but not in an asshole-ish Roger Waters sort of a way. He's always had some really thoughtful, not negative, positive things to say. I think, wouldn't you say that's the truth?
He always comports himself very well in the public and is a fine ambassador for all that is heavy metal and hard rock.
I want to rock.
You said that about 1,000 times better than I did just now. Thank you for that. Thank you for bailing me out. All right, so we've beat the drum so many times about, you know, of course, that's one of the subjects of the reason why we do this is these old has-been rockers that are still going up on stage, destroying the music that we grew up listening to, right? So Dee Snider has chosen to pipe in on that. This was, again, Loudwire. It's a good place to get some news. This is by Philip Trapp, published a few days ago. Dee Snider discusses rock, aging rockers, and should they even be doing this, actually? And Dee Snider, who's 68, by the way, so he's right up to it there. He does not tour anymore. And he said, I didn't lose the passion for music. I didn't lose it at all. He talks about his last two solos, Leave a Scar and For the Love of Metal. Have you listened to those at all?
The second one.
Second one, how was it? Was it pretty good?
It sounded like a metal record.
Okay, all right.
You know, it was okay.
Fair enough. And this is what he had to say. He has not lost the passion for music, but instead he has lost the willingness to get old on stage. So he's taking kind of the opposite approach to everybody else that keeps going way past their end date, right? I don't want you guys to watch me age out, he says. I read a review once that said, and it was positive review about the Twisted Sister reunion. But it said, when a band reunites and is good, it makes you feel young again. But when they're bad, it makes you realize how old you've gotten. He has absolutely zero desire to fade away and get old and decrepit and be like for Ozzy, for example, where they have to prop him up on a frame just so he doesn't fall over. Right. Or like the guys from Kiss who have to use so many fucking backing tracks because Paul Stanley can't sing anymore. Dee Snider has actually spoken up on the opposite side of this, saying, let's not do that. Let's just let good enough be good enough. Let's not ruin the great image that people have of us. Let's quit while we're ahead, and let's not go overboard on this. I want to commend Dee Snider for taking this approach, because not many of those guys do, because let's face it, when they're doing these old tours that they're doing now, they're making a lot of money doing this. And so it's hard to turn that money down, but I commend him for taking this approach. What do you think?
I think if more rockers felt like Dee Snider does, we wouldn't have a podcast.
Well, I think there's plenty of material out there for us.
No, what do I think? I love it. I think it's a coherent, refreshing, dare I say, mature. It's a way that people should probably view aging anyway, where you age, what is the term, gracefully, and you're not bitter, you don't fight it, you don't look ridiculous because you're trying to pretend you're younger than you really are. I mean, I love this approach. I wish more would take this approach, because I don't like you sending me clips of Glenn Danzig singing for the Misfits when it looks like he's got a VW Beetle under his black mesh shirt. You know what I'm saying?
And he's reached that point where the dudes that have boilers always tuck their shirts in. And when you reach the point where you have to tuck your shirt in, it's probably time to not go on stage, right? Because that's just a bad. Or you can go full on Vince Neil and wear the big, overly loose wife beater and just have it hanging down like a tent. You can do that too, I suppose, if you want to.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I mean, I love this, dude. I think more people, more rockers, if you're well off financially, that you said the kicker. I mean, they're leaving a lot of money on the table when they choose to walk away from the game. I'm sure Paul Stanley, in defense, would say Kiss has a lot more mileage left financially on the tank that he'd be on the mileage on the tank financially. What am I trying to say? Let's hit pause.
A lot left in the tank, or you can say a lot of mileage left on his tires, so to speak.
Right? Something, I don't
something
know.
Like that.
I put the wrong emphasis on the syllable.
The fuck.
What I'm trying to say is that Paul Stanley, in his defense, would probably say, listen, it's easy for you, the guy who fronted Twisted Sister, to walk away. There isn't a pot of gold out there for Twisted Sister. There's some marginal kind of like rock and roll cruise money out there, but for Kiss to hang it up, they're still doing very well in the nostalgia world, the you know, on these nostalgia tours, and Kiss still, you know, can put 20,000 in an arena. So they're leaving a lot more on the table to turn around and walk away. So I'm sure that would probably be the argument Paul Stanley would make.
True. I would counter that by saying, in his particular case, and in guys like him, like I would put Motley Crue in with him and Ozzy and those guys, they all have enough, they've amassed enough money over the decades to where these 20,000 seat nostalgia tours that they're still selling out is meaningless, because the money that they make from these tours, their grandkids probably won't even get to that money, because there's so much more of it that's coming before that, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So it would be like Dee Snider consequently would have more motivation to do the nostalgia tours because he doesn't have as much money as Paul Stanley. So he has even more incentive to do these nostalgia tours than Paul Stanley does. So Paul Stanley could never use the money excuse because he's got tons that he's never going to spend.
He should float a little bit my way.
Holy crap, that'd be nice, wouldn't it? And you know what? The other thing is, if all of these 70 and 80 year old guys that keep doing these tours from 30 years ago, if they all stopped doing that, it would leave a giant void in music that could be filled by something new. There's this guy in Critical Theory, the last name is Lacan. He says we speak out of loss, and there's no incentive to speak if there's no loss. And if all these guys stop and there's a void, then that forces people to want to fill that void with something different. And so now we've got new music, right? But there's no incentive to create new music because there's no voids right now because all the spaces are filled. So I like it, man. I wish these guys would just, it's okay to call it quits. It's okay, Scott. I can't wait till I can quit. That would
damn
be
it.
Great.
I quit. You can't fire me because I quit.
Have you ever gotten fired from a job and just decided that you quit before they fired you?
No. Unfortunately, when I was fired, I was completely blindsided by it. I've been laid off, fired.
How many jobs have you been fired from?
Just one. Been laid really? Off. Been laid off like half a dozen times, but just fired once.
I think I've been fired probably two or three times.
Yeah.
Over my life, but I've had 100 jobs, so... but anyway, so yeah, so good on D. I like it. Thanks for trying to balance that out a little bit by taking the other side of that coin. And I like it because I think more people should take your approach. Anyway, so I know I am trying to explore Ghost as a band. I know you've listened to them a lot more than I have, and I know you're a big fan of them. But did you know that just recently they did a concert in St. Louis? I know you know because you read the article. Again, from Loudwire. So they did a concert recently in St. Louis where the venue was really confusing a lot of people. And they posted a message saying that you couldn't wear makeup to the Ghost concert. And if you wore a mask, it had to be removable. So it's a Ghost concert where lots of people wear face makeup to emulate the band, right? Kind of like Kiss, right? And so some of the entrances, they wouldn't even let them in. Some of the entrances, they were making them wash their makeup off. Some of the entrances, they didn't give a fuck and were letting them in. So it was really confusing for a lot of people. Ghost, by the way, and Amon Amarth were both of the band. They played the Hollywood Casino Amphitheater in St. Louis. And it wound up being a really big deal because, you know, kind of like a Kiss concert or any of those other, or an Insane Clown Posse concert for that matter, your audience wants to participate. They want to be a part of the event, and they dress up and they put face makeup on. And it caused a lot of controversy and a lot of confusion for people, Scott.
I saw a ghost at the House of Blues in Cleveland on their second, was it their second or third record? I think it was their second record. It was a good time to see them because now a ghost ticket costs a lot more. But at the time, second record, they didn't quite have all that steam yet. So it was a great show, man. But I'm trying to think. I don't think I saw anyone there in face paint at all.
Really?
But again, they were still, it was only their second record. They've got like five records now and are a headlining act and all that stuff. But
right.
You know, it was in Cleveland. It was at the House of Blues and there was one person there in face paint. And you know what? It was me. I showed up. I went to the show. I was confused. I was in Cleveland. I wore brown and orange and I painted my face like a dog. You know, I just was confused.
You thought it was a Bruce. You thought it was a Bruce Springsteen concert, didn't you?
Yes, that's it. Of course, a Bruce Springsteen. I was eating Alpo and throwing dog bones at Papa Emeritus
and batteries, right?
And batteries, yeah. No, but I don't think anybody there had face paint on. Now that I think about it, except for the singer, of course. But hey, man, the kids get excited for a show. It's an opportunity to dress up. It's an opportunity to celebrate an early Halloween. What a bummer that they made them all,
Yeah, and the venue consequently wound up apologizing for the confusion. I don't think I saw their statement. You saw it too. They didn't really, to me, they didn't apologize for the policy, but they apologized about the confusion about how the policy was laid, was communicated, I think is what they really apologized for. But my question to you is this: do you find it a coincidence that this happened at a ghost concert and this has never happened at a Kiss concert and it's never happened at an Insane Clown Posse concert? Do you find any connection with it being a ghost concert with all the quote unquote Satanism topics in their music and all the evil shit that they quote unquote sing about? Do you find any link to that?
Could it be Satan?
I never thought of it. My thought was, I guess these things haven't happened at a Kiss or an Insane Clown Posse. I'd never considered that conspiratorial side. It never, never came to mind. My thought was initially, well, maybe it's related to like alcohol sales and they want to see that you match the face on their ID so that they can sell you booze or not. Right. So that was my thought. I'm looking for logic in it. I can't see what the harm is in letting kids wear face paint to a show. But the only thing I can think of, I really don't think ghosts courts any controversy where they play. None that I'm aware of. That feels like a very 80s thing, to like single out bands as like,
I feel like
occultists or something.
Exactly. I feel like because of their subject matter and how they have fun with that, I feel like they're being singled out is the whole point of this, because there are other bands that wear makeup and masks, Slipknot, Mudvayne, yada yada yada, and I have never heard of this happening at any of, maybe somebody out there, Mark, I'm sure you're listening, so if you want to correct me on this, go for it, buddy. But I'm not aware of this happening anywhere else, but maybe it has, but I just feel like they're singled out, which is not fair.
I mean, Ghost is probably like my favorite like new-ish band. I'm one of the early adopters. I got on board with when they just had the one record out. And Satanism in the world of Ghost is like, it's like Satanism like on the Brady Bunch. It's purely tongue-in-cheek. It's a gimmick, and like it's a gimmick that they openly admit to, and it's like purely tongue-in-cheek. Yes, they do take the piss out of religion, but there's no question that that's kind of what they're using it for, but
yeah.
To poke at organized religion. But it's I think this guy's as much of a Satanist as Elmer Fudd. I mean, there's just
exactly that's exactly the truth.
Nothing there.
Anyways, leave them alone. Let their fans wear fucking makeup if they want to wear makeup. Jesus Christ. Like, just be happy that you have people that love music and want to be entertained. There's nothing wrong with escaping reality for a minute. But having said that, I think we're going to take a little break. And when we come back, speaking of St. Louis, we're going to talk about the father of rock and roll who just happens to be from St. Louis. So stick around.
Before you go, if you like heavy metal and stories, then you'll love Battle of the Bands, the narrative form metal podcast that unpacks the biggest rivalries in rock and metal history. Season 1 took in Megadeth versus Metallica, and Season 2 went across the divide to explore the beef between Judas Priest and Iron Maiden. It's like Business Wars, but metal. Find Battle of the Bands wherever you listen to your podcasts or visit battleofthebandspod.com.
We are gathered here to remember rock and roll. Rock was born the rambunctious son of country, western, and blues. In the year of our Lord, 1955. On this day, the birth of rock and roll gifted unto the world a gyrating pelvis, a throbbing beat, and a pulsating rhythm, a sound so infectious and rollicking that it would endow previously scrupulous young minds with identity, individualism, and purpose, thus setting forth a multi-generational pursuit of all that is loud, debaucherous, and unholy. But, sadly, like all earthly endeavors, rock too must perish. Oh, we mourn the loss of rock and roll, with its ridiculously old standard bearers still on tour and charging ungodly amounts of Mad Jack to witness their long past the sell-by date asses on stage, and with its chauvinism, misogyny, and whiteness no longer aligning with modern sensibilities, and with its aging, fist-shaking fan base kicking every would-be rocker off their proverbial lawn, rock has indeed passed into the celestial void. May rock rest in peace in eternal cacophonous slumber. Amen.
Thank you for that, Scott.
You are listening to the Rock and Roll Autopsy Podcast.
The Autopsy Report.
All right, ladies and germs, welcome back. We are going to talk about father of rock and roll, Scott. We're gonna talk Chuck Berry, man. Chuck fucking Berry, dude. It's about time. We haven't gone this far back yet, so welcome to the lab, Chuck. We are gonna be talking about his 1972 recording, My Ding-a-ling. It was his only Hot 100 number one single in the United States. Of all the great songs that he did, he was a big fan of T-Bone Walker, is one of his biggest influences, actually. This song was originally written by Dave Bartholomew in like 20 years prior to him doing it in 1972. And so this is a recording that was done live at the Lanchester Arts Festival in Coventry, England on February 3rd, 1972. And like I said, it was his only number one hit. But we're going to figure out if it killed rock, dude. So let her rip, Mr. R.
Thank you, Rico. Yeah, man. Chuck Berry, dude. Have we gone this far back into like the birth of rock and roll yet? I don't even remember. We've done so damn many of these things.
I don't know. I think the farthest back that we've gone is late 60s, but yeah. even though this song is a 72 song, this Chuck Berry was already like 15 years into his career, at least when he did this song.
Yeah, we haven't done Carl Perkins or we've talked about Elvis, but we haven't done any Elvis. We haven't done Chuck Berry or Little Richard.
Dude, can I tell you, Carl Perkins is a fucking stud, by the way. I love his music. But yeah, dude, we haven't talked about any of the OGs, and this is the first one, so...
Well, welcome to the show, yeah. Chuck Berry. I remember you telling a story. You saw Chuck Berry at a Moondog concert years ago.
Yeah, in the late 80s when they did the when they kind of recreated, like back in the 50s, I think they did the first Moondog coronation ball in Cleveland, right? And they had like Chuck Berry and a bunch of the old OGs, right? Fats Domino might have been there, I don't know. But anyways, in the late 80s, they recreated the whole thing and they had another Moondog coronation ball. And I don't remember all the people that were there, but Chuck Berry was like one of the mainliners, right? And where we were, it was me and a friend of mine that lived in the apartments where I lived. And he was also a big Chuck Berry fan too. And my mom actually, and we were literally a, like during we were so close to Chuck Berry actually that the friend of mine that I was with stuck his arm out and touched his guitar. That's how close we were, probably from me to my laptop Chuck Berry, or less than 5 feet, like for an hour. It was great, man. Was like awesome. Right in front of us. It was a freaking amazing show. This would have been late 80s, so he'd have been probably close to 60 or so. He probably would have been around there. Well, I don't know when he was born. I'm sure you do, because you always look that up. But by the time the late 80s, and he was still super energetic. He played, sounded great. He sung great. It was an awesome time. So yeah,
he was born October 18th, 1926.
Woo! So he'd have been like early 60s.
Yeah, man.
Although that's not that old.
All right. No, not at all. Well, thank you for the fine autopsy report. It's Rock and Roll Autopsy. We've got Chuck Berry on the show. Chuck, welcome to the show. I hate to do this to you, buddy. You're the father of rock and roll. You passed away recently, 2017. The guy made it to 90. Good on you, man. Big bucket of win for Chuck Berry on that one. But the nature of the beast, man. I'm sorry. We got to put you on trial. We got to use our proprietary science. We've got to find out if my ding-a-ling killed Rock and No laughing, Rico. The double oath entendre.
I have no idea what you're referring to.
No laughing. We got to find out if my ding-a-ling, my minuscule schlonger, killed rock and roll. And to do so, well, first of all, Rico, did you read that news story about that kid? They found a child. He was probably in grade school. I'm guessing maybe fourth, fifth grade, in his bedroom, passed out on the bed, unconscious, with earbuds in his ears and a Wasp record on the turntable. And in his hand, he had a number two pencil and a notepad. And at the top of it, he had scrawled out, "Gratuitous boomerism plus one." Should he have even attempted it, Rico? What a tragedy.
What'll happen if if anybody out there attempts to do what we do, it's kind of like when I was like, did I ever tell you this story? When I was like 9 or 10, I had a stomach ache once. And so when we lived in South Florida, and my mom pulls out this blue bottle of liquid stuff. I didn't know what it was at the time, this blue bottle. And she's like, here, drink some of this. It'll make you feel better. So I drink some of the stuff in the blue bottle, right? The only stuff in the blue bottle, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah.
So my sister and her boyfriend were in the living room watching TV or whatever they were doing. I don't even remember. And so I decided, because I felt the gurgles, right? I'm like, ooh, and again, I was like 9 or 10, right? So I'm like, ooh, I'm gonna. So I got up in front of like I was on stage with this big grin on my face, and I spread my legs and I pushed that mother out like I was gonna rip a huge fart in front of my sister and her boyfriend. Well, it wasn't just gas that came out of my butt, if you know what I mean.
Sure, I do.
Yeah, I wound up shitting my pants in front of my sister and her boyfriend. So if anybody tries to do what we do, it's kind of like the time I shit my pants in front of my sister and her boyfriend. I thought I was doing something super cool at the time, but ultimately it wound up uncomfortable, embarrassing. So just leave it to us. We'll take care of it for you.
And on a side note, undeterred by the horror that had unfolded in the living room, your sister's boyfriend still attempted to get a piece 45 minutes later.
Absolutely. And as awkward as it was, poop and farts are still funny as fuck. So there you go. But no, right, don't please don't try this at home. You're just going to wind up like me shitting my pants. Just don't do it.
Thank you very much. So, Rock and Roll Autopsy. Did my ding-a-ling kill Rock and Roll? Gotta find out. Proprietary science, blah the fucking blah. We've got five categories. They are gratuitous boomerism, excessive misogyny, wanton whiteness, malignant machismo, and culture vulturism. Rico, took us a long time today to get here, but we're here now. The song is my ding-a-ling. The artist, the legendary father of rock and roll, Chuck Berry. Gratuitous boomerism. Sir, how do you score?
Before I give my score, I forgot to insert, we don't want you trying what we do here. However, if any of you feel like you're amateur sleuths or aspiring detectives and you think you might have a potential suspect that you think may have killed Rock and Roll, I think we've actually figured out how to leave the voice message now. So on our Spotify homepage, there is a link to leave a voice message. And also, if you're in Spotify and listen to an episode, there is also a link in there to leave a voice message. So if you think you have somebody that you want us to put through the paces and through the gauntlet to see if it killed Rock, leave us a voice message and we'll take care of it for you. Having said that, so boomerism, I feel like there's, you know, when something is referred to as a ding-a-ling, that's kind of a boomer saying, right? I mean, we can't give Chuck the obligatory half point for boomers, and because he's fucking older than that, dude. He's greatest generation, right?
Yeah, he's
right.
Yes.
Isn't that what that's called, the greatest generation?
Yeah.
Or is that the silent generation?
No,
the same thing.
I think he overshot Joe Biden. He's even older than that. He's in the greatest generation. So,
okay.
Yeah.
So a dude,
we're going way back here.
I mean, I feel like this is a, listen, it's a fun novelty song, not written by him, but it's a fun novelty song. Nothing wrong with that. Fun novelty songs go beyond generation, but I got to give it a half point just for the term ding-a-ling, because that's not even really used anymore, because it went from actually being a bell to somebody's fruit basket, and then it was used to refer to somebody that you thought was dumb. You would call them a ding-a-ling, but now it's really not used that much. So I'm gonna give them a half a point for gratuitous boomers.
All right, yeah, I'm just gonna end up repeating a lot of what you said.
I'm sorry for being long-winded, by the way, on that.
No, you're fine. You arrived, I think, at a good score, and you put some meat behind it. That's the whole idea. And by meat, I mean man meat.
Vienna sausage.
Listen, he's not a boomer, and I struggle with this song. Even I the song came out, what'd you say, 72, something like that. So a little late.
He recorded it in 72, but it was actually written like at least a decade before that.
Yes, it's a cover song, but
1952, actually. So it was written in the early 50s.
Yeah. So, you know, so it's a cover a little later in the career. I don't know, man. I'm going to give it a zero. I feel like this kind of, in a way, almost predates what I would consider boomerism. And so
right.
I your ding-a-ling. I understand right. Where you're coming from with your reference to your ding-a-ling. I get that, but I'm going to go ahead and score it a zero on that one.
No, I totally agree. And I painfully gave that half point because I don't feel, I agree with everything that you said. So, but I felt like the term garnered the half point. Anyways, moving along.
Let's move on. Category two, excessive misogyny. My Ding-a-ling, Chuck Berry. Rico, I've got the lyrics available if you need me to read a verse or two.
Can you please read a verse or two?
When I was a little bitty boy, my grandmother bought me a cute little toy, silver bells hanging on a string. She told me it was my ding-a-ling-a-ling. Oh, my ding-a-ling, I want you to play with my ding-a-ling. And then mama took me to grammar school, but I stopped off in the vestibule, and every time that bell would ring, catch me playing with my ding-a-ling. Then the chorus, and then I'll read one more verse, and then we'll be done with this nonsense. Oh, that is beautiful. You know what I heard? I heard two girls over here singing in harmony. That's all right, honey. This is a free country. Live like you want to live, baby. You ain't got to knock it, doll. Yeah, what is this I'm reading?
Okay. Now, what? I'll tell you what that is. This is during a live show in London, and during that section, he's actually talking to a couple of girls in the audience.
Oh my gosh, and they put it in the lyrics.
It's actually him interacting with the audience there while he's doing the song.
I would consider that a live like rap with you. Like, you wouldn't put a Paul Stanley audience rap in the lyrics to Love Gun, would you, if you were going to put them online?
Then she says to me, "Why don't you take off your pants?" Now I look at this girl, I say, "Honey, I'm feeling just a little bit shy." So she looked at me. I'm wearing my Levi's, my 501s, you know, those real tight ones. So she walks over, she bends down, and she undoes that little snap at the top. Then she reaches down just a little bit, she undoes the next one, she goes, next one. She opens up my pants. She checks her hand out to make sure it's not too cold, and she sticks it down the front. And she pulls out. Says to me, "Paul, what are you doing with that pistol down your pants?" I said to her, "Honey, that ain't no pistol." I said to her, "Honey, that ain't no pistol, that's my..." I said, "Honey, that ain't no pistol, that's my love gun."
No, I thought of that, the story, the doctor visit story.
All right.
I want to see that in text form, actually. That would be awesome.
we'd all lose an IQ point or two. Thank you for clarifying. Let me get on to the actual lyrics here. Once I was climbing the garden wall, I slipped and had a terrible fall. I fell so hard, I heard bells ring, but held on to my ding-a-ling. Now, here's my one of my favorite verses, and then I'll stop because it's getting ridiculous. It just goes on and on. Once I was swimming across Turtle Creek, man, them snappers all around my feet.
Yep.
Sure was hard swimming across that thing with both hands holding my ding-a-ling.
Listen, man, there is nothing wrong about somebody having really positive, warm, fuzzy feelings about a musical instrument, Scott. You got a problem with that? You got a problem with people having it? You know, he got some silver bells from his grandma, right? And he just loves playing with his bells. Is there anything wrong with that? Is that misogynistic? I don't think so. They're getting a zero from me. Nothing misogynistic about loving your instrument, right?
I love scrolling down into the comments on Song Meeting.
Oh, that's the best. Yep.
We've got a comment here, and I can't even read the guy's name, but Chuck Berry was one of the fathers of rock and roll with no particular place to go. Roll over Beethoven, Memphis, Tennessee, etc. This is just sellout schmaltz. Its selling point being every verse has the same lame double entendre about masturbating. It demonstrates, well, that the pop charts have always been populated with crap, as this was his only number one.
Well, whoever that person was, Chuck Berry said about this song that he actually, you know, during certain parts of his younger years, wanted to be a comedian. And so he did this song live because he just wanted to do something fun. He wanted to do a fun song and have a little bit of fun with it. Okay. Nothing wrong with that.
This person,
if you might read a double entendre in there, I mean, can't stop you from that, right? That's up to you.
This person in the comment below actually claps back at that individual and says, with respect, this song, which was later in his career, is actually reminiscent of his original songwriting style from his early cosmopolitan club days, when he went from playing standard blues songs to upbeat, lyrically lighthearted, hillbilly-esque, and race-friendly creations. The response he got from the audience from those early days motivated him to continue in that style, with some songs being a little more silly, a la Ding-a-ling, than others.
I'll agree with that. Actually, I listened when I was a younger lad. I listened to Chuck Berry was a regular spin for me. Listened to a lot of Chuck Berry, and yeah, I would agree with that. Actually, a lot of his songs are super light, nothing heavy about them. But yeah, I mean, sure, it's a double entendre. He's talking about his dick. So what? What of it? What of it? That 14 year old that he tried to haul across state lines didn't have a problem with it. He got busted. He got busted for that. We can add him to the list, Scott. He actually got arrested and he did time for that because he took a 14 year old across state lines.
Oh my gosh. Woo! All right. Yikes. Well, here's a verse that I guess is in another version that he recorded. It goes like this.
Gotcha.
My first lesson when I learned to swim. The gym teacher, My first lesson when I learned to swim, the gym teacher told the girl, go and rescue him. She grabbed a hold of my bell and string and pulled me out by my ding-a-ling.
Swing, swing, tentpole.
Well, that's a little more in your face, so to speak. That's not quite so veiled as the original version.
So apparently there are some different versions that.
Yeah, I didn't know that there was a different version. I didn't know that those lyrics existed, actually.
Me neither. So I'm not going to penalize him on this, and I'm going to give it a 0 for excessive misogyny. Let's move on. Category 3, wanton whiteness. Chuck Berry, My Ding-a-ling.
I mean, first of all, he's not white. But second of all, there's nothing white about anything that he did ever. Like, really, I mean, his biggest influence was T-Bone Walker. Everything that he played was ridiculously blues based. Even the more bluesy, more rock and rolly stuff was still heavily blues based. The blues was invented by black people, thankfully, because they did a great job of that. Yeah, this is a big fat 0 for me, dude.
Yeah, it's a 0 for me as well. How in the hell can I take Chuck Berry and give him
Chuck Berry? Jesus.
Yeah, obviously. Can I give him a 5? No, it's a 0 for wanton whiteness. Nothing to see here. Moving right along. Category 4. My Ding-a-ling, Malignant Machismo. Rico, how do you score?
This one's a little tricky, right? Because this song that was actually banned on some radio stations. Some stations refused to play this song in spite of it hitting number one in the Billboard 100. So, sure, it does have a little bit of that, you know, there are some sexual innuendos there that fuck it. It's getting a 0 for me, dude. I can't penalize this dude for this shit. it's totally in fun. The double entendre is brilliantly laid out. This is a big fat 0 for me.
It's, I think, our second song we've done about masturbation. We did She Bop a few episodes back, too.
That's right.
my ding-a-ling. So is it, you know, I think men, not me, of course, I don't suffer from any of these kind of crazy obsessions, but men really love, we love our Johnson. And I think if we were told, you know, you got to live the rest of your life, you know, without your Johnson, that's not something that we could fathom. If someone said to you, Rico, I'll give you $1 billion, but you got to lop your penis off, you're probably going to be like, I think I'm keeping my penis, you know?
I don't need $1 billion that bad.
I don't know that $1 billion can buy your penis. I mean, I think that men are, we love this thing. We've been diddling with it since the day we were born. We're always, you know, walking around, adjusting ourselves. You know, we might, you know, shake it a few too many times after using the urinal. You know, we might make kind of adjustments on the baseball diamond when we're squaring up at the plate. You know, if things start to get a little shifty, you know, every once in a while, we might, maybe after taking a leak, be a little overzealous and pull our zipper up too fast and snag a little bit of it. And kind of
happened to me before.
Oh man, we've all been there, right?
Oh yeah.
But dude, we spent a lot of time thinking about our ding-a-ling.
Listen, every guy's fruit basket is kind of like what Eddie in Christmas Vacation said. It's the gift that keeps on giving. And that's a fact, dude. Like, why would you ever want to eliminate the gift that keeps on giving?
Listen, my ding-a-ling isn't perfect. It's modest. You know, I wish maybe there was, it's one thing I wish there was more of in my life. You know, there aren't too many parts of my body that I look at and think, boy, I wish there was more of that. My nose is huge, you know, got to get in the middle age gut going on. You know, I don't look in the mirror and think, boy, I'd like more hair on my ears, but I do look at my wiener and think, you know what? I could get by with another half inch to an inch to 3 inches to six. You know what I mean? Because it's a good thing, more of a good thing.
I mean, unless you're that one friend of ours that with the beer can, you know who I'm talking about.
I do.
This one friend of ours claims that his fruit basket's like big and thick like a beer can. He always used to say that. Of course, I never had the pleasure of. I always told him to whip it out because I wanted to see it, but he never did that. Unfortunately, because I wanted to see if his claims were true.
Oh my gosh. So yeah, men are, we're obsessed with our ding-a-lings.
For sure. Absolutely.
And so I think because of that unique male perspective, and that only a dude would sing, do women find this song funny? Men do. Do women find this song amusing? Or is
my mom loved
dumb?
It. My mom loved it.
Well, my good mom on loved her. The song. Well, maybe,
but okay. I don't know anybody. I don't know any other females that even know this song. So maybe you're right on that.
Well, I don't know if I made my point or not, but I'm going to give it a 0.5.
All right.
Just because only dudes are going to sing a song about and get a charge out of a song that's lame double entendres about our wiener.
Tentpole.
I mean, females like our friend who writes about her wet ass pussy. There's no double entendres there. It's right. And that's the difference between female guys. Guys have to like wrap it up in some veiled analogies, right? Women like, who's that? Cardi B, right? Is it Cardi B?
Yes.
Yeah, Cardi B just fucking lays it right out. And so that's the big difference. So you're right. You're absolutely right. So.
All right, let's move on. All right, let's wrap up. This
I don't know what I was trying to accomplish with that, but
I think you just
saw the opening and I took it.
Yeah, that's all that was. We've gone a handful of episodes without mentioning wet ass pussy, and you had to work it in there again just to make sure we earn that explicit rating on our podcast.
Oh boy, I take it back.
Just so anyone who happens to be listening at work can get canned from their job.
Right.
Good job, Rico. All right.
Thanks.
Rock and Roll Autopsy, Chuck Berry, my ding-a-ling. Our final category, culture vulturism. Rico, how do you score?
Well, you could probably, if you wanted to, give him a half point for not writing this song, for doing somebody else's song, but that's nothing new. Other people have done other people's songs since the beginning of time. That's just the way of things. That doesn't necessarily mean he ripped anybody off. Sure, he was, especially with this song. This song, nobody else, not even the person who wrote this song, is known for this song. He is known for this song. Nobody else has even tried to do this song, I don't think. Mark, you're probably correct me on that too. But I cannot. Mark. No, man, I love it.
Stop giving that guy work.
No, I can't help it. We suck. So we need some we need somebody to it's kind of like at this point in time, we suck so bad. We need Mark to kind of make us remotely listenable at this point in time.
That was anyway, funny.
Yeah, anyway, no, this is a big fat zero, dude. There's nothing vulturistic about this. This is totally him being himself, and I just no way I'm penalizing him for that.
Yeah, here's my thing is I'm trying to do my due diligence and actually take this grading responsible. Try to take this evaluation seriously.
Yeah.
But so I'm looking around and I'm like, okay, well, where could there be some vulturism? And it occurred to me that even though the song came out in the early 70s, I'd lump it in with the grand tradition of like 50s and 60s novelty songs, of which there were many, right? There was Purple People Eater, The Witch Doctor, Monster Mash, Itsy Bitsy Teeny Weeny, Yellow Polka Dot Bikini, My Ding-a-ling.
Who the hell was that dude? Was Ray something that did a bunch of novelty songs in the 70s and 60s? What the hell's that dude's name? Ray something.
I can't recall, but there were so many of them. It was kind of a thing back then, right? Yeah. All these novelty songs, right?
For sure.
I kind of, even though it's late to the game, I kind of lump it in with those in my brain. So I thought, well, maybe I could figure some culture vultures. Maybe he's trying to, he's a late Johnny come lately to the novelty song train, right? Trying to hop on in the 70s to a fad that kind of existed in the 50s and 60s, right? So I think, well, maybe there's something there. But then I think, you know what? Fuck that. This is Chuck Berry, dude. The father of rock and roll, who doesn't get credit for it by and large. Everybody, you know, Elvis Presley, the king of rock and roll, right? So Chuck Berry is like a footnote to the creation of rock and roll whenever Elvis kind of gets all the credit, right? So I'm not going to do him dirty like that. This is a guy who was vultured. So I'm not going to sit here and try to accuse him of vulturism. You know, Chuck Berry died at 90 in 2017. And I was thinking about this today. You know, the guy was the father of rock and roll and lived long enough all the way up to 2017 to see music change and rock and roll become the most dominant form of music for a window of time. It's since lost its place at the top, but he saw this genre that he created out of blues blow up and become huge. But as an African-American man, it had to make me wonder if he like felt strange, like as he's in later in life, like in his 60s and 70s, playing gigs, playing music he created to probably what I would imagine was a largely white audience. And meanwhile, African Americans were like embracing R&B, soul, hip hop, right? And the music he created was largely kind of co-opted by white folks, and everybody who went and saw it live was white people, right?
That's a good point.
Be interesting if I wonder if anybody in an interview ever asked him about that, because I would be curious if you sat back, if you created something and it became huge, and then you kind of watch it not have the audience for which it probably was intended or originally came from X number of years later, probably felt kind of strange, right?
Yeah, I mean, from the beginning until probably mid to late 70s, you know, rock was kind of multicultural, right? From certain points of view. But once it hit the 80s, dude, it was super cracker white. Rock became super duper white starting in around 1980 or so. So yeah, that would be interesting to see or to get his opinion on how he felt about that evolution of rock over time, because from early, he witnessed like 60 years of rock, you know, and I would love to have sat down and just have a conversation with him for about an hour or two about all that, just to get his perspective on things. I think that would be fascinating.
And all his contemporaries and influences when he got started were all African-American, you know, and then you get down the pike 50 years later and there aren't any in the audience. You know what I mean? And
right.
It's like, you have to kind of wonder, you know, I'd just be interested to know his perspective on that. Anyway,
for sure. I totally agree on that.
So for culture vulturism, I'm giving a 0. Rico, let's tally him up. What have got, sir?
I've got tonight, I've only got a half a point.
You know, I think whenever you pick a song like My Ding-a-Ling for this podcast that does a very specific thing, I think you feel like it's fish in the barrel. Oh, this is a dick joke. It's going to kill rock and roll, right?
Yep, right.
Well, Rico, I've got a half a point too for a total of
1 point. That's it. 1 point. This is Chuck Berry, dude. Like, Chuck Berry did not kill rock and roll. He helped invent rock and roll. So nothing that this guy has written will score above a 1 or 2 or 3, in my opinion, because I just don't see it happening.
It's an example of the science working. Whenever you go in, you think, oh, this is going to be a whole podcast about dick jokes. And then it comes out the other side and you're like, you know what? 1 point.
Right.
I'm not doing Chuck dirty like that.
In fact, I'm kind of surprised he scored 1 point.
Well, you know.
But that just goes to show you that the science works. Like, indeed. we didn't cherry pick this one and not give him any points. That would taint the validity of our science.
Well, listen, all this talk about ding-a-ling has really got me all worked up, all hot and bothered.
Yeah, maybe we ought to cut this short so we can go practice our instruments. Look, we did this and we didn't even shit our pants doing it. That's why we're the experts.
Nice. All right, gang. It's been Rock and Roll Autopsy. Good night now.
Let me have that special rock and roll music. Yeah!
Let me tell you, so the lyrics to real rock music is nothing more than satanic cyanide. Get it out of your house, throw it out, and burn it. It has no place in the house of the righteous.
You guys, it was like a mistake. There's no mystique anymore.
Oh, I'm gone.
Follow us on Twitter at RNR Autopsy, or you can send an email to rockandrollautopsy@gmail.com. And if we run across anything good, we'll mention it in a future episode. Thanks for listening. Later.
Well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.